everyone, and welcome back to Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. I am Jonah, joined as always by my co-host Ben.
Hello, hello.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, my mom, Janine.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the show, Mom. How's it going?
All well, all well. I was thrilled to be able to spend 2 weeks here in New Jersey from Arizona, and 2 weeks of games. It was great.
Yeah, it's been good. And even a day of disc golf with Ben, right?
A day of disc golf, right.
That was the ace day.
That's right, the ace day. So how did my mom do at disc golf, man?
Good. I didn't really know what to expect, and it worked out just fine. We didn't lose any discs, which is always a plus. So.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, Mom, I didn't tell you. I got a text today from someone who found the disc that I lost.
Wow. That was just a few from the other disc session you had.
Right. So for those listening, we went disc golfing this past weekend, me and Ben, and I threw a disc through the trees and it disappeared. And I looked for it for 10 minutes. This happened twice. I found the first one, did not find the second one. But Ben, you were kind enough to go and pick that up for me today, right?
Yeah, I went because I'm closer to this course than you are by, I think, quite a bit. At least 15 minutes. And I went to the course and it was dead empty. This guy had the whole course to himself. And luckily, this course weaves back through the woods. And luckily, he was right on the part right near the road. So I just had to drive in and he was right there and I picked the disc up. So I'll bring it tomorrow when we go and you can get it back.
That's great.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, anyway, let's start talking about the games that we've played this past week. So when my mom shares, Janine, I will refer to you as Janine here on out so people don't hear me say mom 100 times.
This is good.
Janine, when you share your games, you can just share all the games that you've played and we'll run through them all and do some quick thoughts on each one because every game that you played was with me.
That's right. So we are going to talk about what I played in the last 2 weeks because I've been here for 2 weeks. And before these last 2 weeks, I should say that the last time I played a board game was when you were in Arizona for Thanksgiving, and we played Azul. So
that's right.
That's the last time. But running over what we played these last 2 weeks, we started out with Crokinole, which I expect has to be the oldest game also.
Yeah, 1868, I think, is when it was invented.
Right, and I got to tell you, when I heard you guys talking about it, it didn't seem like much to me, but I really enjoyed it. You know, this flicking thing, which reminded me of knock hockey or something, you know.
Wait, so had you not played Crokinole before?
No, I hadn't played any of these games before that we're going to talk about.
Oh, wow. For some reason, I thought that I know that Jessica's family plays it, but for some reason, I thought that you had also tried it at some point. So it's news to me. But yes, Crokinole was awesome. And it seems like it's not much. And then you play it and it's like addicting.
That's exactly it. And I happened to find in my research that there are Crokinole tournaments. But I guess with all these games, you know, these world tournaments. And, you know, I looked around on how to play and stuff like that. And that whole thing, you know, Jonah's great at teaching. And the thing about keeping one butt cheek on the chair apparently is part of the rules.
That's the most crucial rule in board games.
So, but I enjoyed it. I had to learn to, I guess, not really flick. Flicking can be a little aggressive. But, you know, learning how to control the finger.
All about the push.
Yeah, when I first introduced Crokinole to my mom, she flicked like pretty hard, and she kept saying like my finger's killing me and like it hurts my finger, and she would always overshoot the center. And now she I don't say anything to her because I just like when she plays games, but now she does a little bit of a drag, which you're not allowed to do, but
not legal.
No, but I don't say anything. I just let her play.
I also noted in my research that the discs are not completely flat. That was the guy on, what's the name of that site? Sit Down and Shut Up.
Shut Up and Sit Down.
Right. So, right. He's the British guy who also said you can get information on Wikipedia. But he explained that the discs are not completely flat. So that's interesting.
Right. They're slightly rounded, which I don't know the reasoning. Do you know the reasoning?
I think it's for ease of movement.
Hmm. And for fun spins at the end of the shots.
Right. So, yeah, I really enjoy that. And like I say, I guess you don't know until you try it.
That's right. All right, Janine, next up on the list is?
Bus. I really liked bus, but I have to play, you know, more than once to say, you know, to really say much about it. I really enjoyed it. It's just, you know, you got to learn the rules and learn the strategy.
Yeah, bus was a really good play. I think you and Jessica did a great job. The final score, I think, was me 9, you or Jessica 7, and then the other one of you 6.
Right.
And, you know, I got a point or two on the first turn because I have played before and I knew what to do. So, you know, I think it was a great session, and you both took to it pretty quickly.
That's great. Yeah. Silver and gold, we're going to talk about later, maybe?
We'll talk about later, since it is our game of the week.
All right. Next, we played Teach You. And that, I didn't realize that this is a relatively new game for Jonah. But now, had you played a virtual?
Yeah,
I mean, you were well-versed in the rules.
Right. I had played a virtual session of Teach You a time or two with friends in Australia before playing in the real world with you, Jessica, and my grandmother, your mom.
That's right. Ben, you've played Teach You, right? I seem to remember. Yeah.
Yes. Listeners will remember that I had a bad time.
Right. I remember you say now it all. Now, when I think back, I'm up to date, except for last week's. I have to say the last one I heard was 2 weeks ago, which was Gemma. But now I seem to remember. Is this the one where you said you gave away your phoenixes or your dragons? That stuff is difficult to keep track of, I got to say. But I mean, I enjoy these games that have complicated rules. I mean, for one thing, it means that the game makers or the game developers are really giving it thought. Unless they're just trying to confuse us all.
Right.
But I got to, you know, learn about the Phoenix Dragon stuff. You know, Jonah just rattles it off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've played it a few times. I just wanted to ask really quickly, what were your thoughts on playing a trick-taking game with your mother, the avid bridge player?
Well, you're not really. I mean, I think that she had the same difficulty with the special cards that I did. I mean, it's not trumps, it's not bidding. So I'm not sure that bridge really plays into this.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, you have not played bridge before, or many trick-taking games, right?
And I don't think that I've played bridge before. And I think I know. Yeah, I probably haven't played bridge. I honestly didn't play like a ton of card games growing up or really recently. So no, I don't think I've played bridge. I know Euchre because my friend's dad really likes it. But other than that, I don't really remember the names of many of these card games I've played.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are so many card games out there. So
Ben, just really, really briefly, tell us or remind me, what was it that was difficult about your first Teach You play?
I felt like I was just giving away points and I didn't really contribute much, which made me feel bad. And everything I gave away turned into a gigantic turn for Jonah and Jake. And especially those two phoenixes that I gave away that turned into 9 and 10 card runs, I think it was. And I felt terrible. And I ended up giving away, I think I gave away 300 points and gained a total of 0 the entire time. So it was just frustrating, but I would give it another shot at some point.
Excellent. All right, Janine, next on the list.
Next on the list is Santorini, a two-player game in which you are building towers on the Greek island of Santorini. Have you played that, Ben?
I have. I have some thoughts that I'll chime in with later, depending on what you say about it. But yes, I've played.
It's interesting because I know exactly what your thoughts are. And they, believe it or not, won't be too relevant because of how we played. So, Mom, tell us, how did we play Santorini?
We did not play with these special cards. We played the base game. Those special cards look intriguing. But for the first play, you know, we played the base game. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. Now, this is one that has, I guess, relatively fewer rules than some of these other games that we've spoken about. But, you know, I very much enjoyed it. And Jonah is so patient because I would move one player, but start building around the other player. And every time he said to me, very nicely, build around the player that you placed. So you're trying to build these towers, get to a certain level, but not build to the point where you've built past the, I guess, the point that you can win at that tower.
So the goal is to get to the third level, but the opponent can put a dome on that level, which stops you from ascending and winning.
Right.
So, Ben, what are your thoughts, even though I know them?
Yeah, so I have played both with and without the special god powers. I will probably not play with the powers again. I like the way the gameplay is very much without the powers, but I felt that depending on which powers you got, it swung the game so much in favor of a player or against another player that it just wasn't as fun. Like, I remember when I played with my brother, he got a power that you could pretty much move all the way across the map if you want. You could move like as many spaces as you want. And the power that I had, if I recall correctly, and it's been a while since I've played with the powers, but I didn't have anything near that level of mobility. So I was like building on my end of the map. And then next thing I know, he would come from the far corner of the map, cross the entire island, and then build a dome on my tower and stop me from winning, and then just bop back to his corner and then build again, and I couldn't get over there. And it was like, he beat me in like 6 turns, and I was like, this isn't fun this way. So without the powers is much better, in my opinion.
And I think that it is much better with the powers. The game by itself, just the base Santorini, is a really clean, abstract game, kind of like, you know, checkers and chess. There are only a few types of pieces. In this, there's only one type of piece, which is your person. And the other ones are just blocks that you can really just number 1, 2, and 3. You know, there are different shapes and sizes in the game, but it doesn't mean anything. But I think with the God powers, it's really interesting. Jessica and I have played it, I think, like 37 times, because every time we play it, you know, a game takes 3 or 4 minutes, and we have the different god powers. So I really like the different matchups that you'll find. And my favorite god in Santorini is Pan, which is if you can jump down from 2 levels high, you automatically win. And it's really neat because the other person has to just try and play defense around your people the whole time. The moment you get to too high, they have to build some floors beneath you so you can't jump down 2 levels. So I think it adds a really neat change of pace, but the base game by itself is definitely clean.
Now, I definitely would play with the powers again. I just think the powers that we pulled that one time that we played were like so lopsided that it just made it a little tough. But again, I haven't played with the powers in so long that it's possible I pick powers this next time that make the game way better. And I know that there are some really cool powers in there. But I also like just a clean, abstract strategy game. So I think it fits the bill there as well. So it's nice to have the option to play with the cards or without.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to point out, I don't know if you knew this, but in the rulebook, there are actually banned matchups. So there are god powers that effectively counteract each other. So if you choose this god and this other one comes up, it would say in the rule book, don't play with this against that. So I don't know what you played, but it's possible it was a matchup that was, you know, written in the rules, don't play this matchup because we realize it's not good. Something to think about.
I will have to look into it because it's possible I missed those entirely, and we probably played with one of the ones that you shouldn't use.
So, Ben, being a loyal listener, I would assume that it was even doubly worse that you lost this game to your brother with the don't go there.
At this point, I don't even know what to say. I lose everything to him at least once. So, I mean, it is what it is at this point. If he decides to play a game, I just assume I'm losing. Then again, if I play a game with anybody, I assume I'm losing. So, you know, one of these days I'll win. Jonah actually sent a link out to our little group chat this morning that was like the road to 1,000 losses on Board Game Geek, but it was about like contest losses. But I immediately replied without reading the article and said, oh, I'll get there soon enough. thinking it was about like losing a board game. So, you know, I will get there soon enough.
I can give you an inspirational quote from Michael Jordan that loosely paraphrased is, you know, saying that, you know, I have missed this many foul shots and I have missed this many 3-point attempts, blah, blah, blah. It's because I've missed all these that I have, you know, made the ones that I have made. So take heart.
Yeah, it's funny because the abstract game Go, which is older than chess and computers still can't really beat people at Go because it's such a brain burn. Whereas chess has been, you know, computers have been beating humans at chess for 30 years now. There's a huge saying in Go that is, if you want to get good, you have to first lose 1,000 times or lose 100 times. So there's hope for you yet, Ben.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, eventually I will swing it around in my favor. So it's just going to take a while.
We'll be here for you.
We'll be here for you. That's right.
All right, Janine, what's next?
Next is Hardback. So that was it's a game. You said it was a mix of Scrabble and...
Scrabble and deck building, yes.
Deck building.
So this was your first deck building game, right?
Yes, I guess so. You know what I've played.
That's right. Did you find it difficult to internalize the mechanisms of deck building? Because in deck building games, you know, once you play your first one, the rest of them make sense. It's draw five, use your cards, put that stuff in your discard pile, go back to your deck.
Well, I enjoyed it. I sometimes misplaced things in the wrong piles, but no, I do find that I think I did an okay job with that. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed having the wild cards and I enjoyed the special cards. Now, of course, once again, being a first-time player, I wasn't mindful of the points like I should have been. And, you know, he beat me 60 to, I don't know what, 29.
We don't need to talk scores on here, Mom.
that's just rude.
No, well, you know, that's, you know, we can have another conversation about being mean in games. And I have, you know, I have thoughts about that, too. I mean, as a new player, maybe you should be a little mean so you can teach me. Of course, I'm on vacation and I'm not a serious board gamer like you guys, so it's a little different. No, I enjoyed that. So now, you know, this will be helpful when I listen to you guys again and when you're talking about deck building games. Is that what it's called, deck building?
Yeah. So yeah. I think you said you've listened to all of the episodes. We have
except Patrick last week.
Right.
Yeah.
We have an earlier episode with Rich.
Okay.
That was about deck building. That was his mechanic of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So if you listen to that one again, not that you would maybe want to do that, things might make more sense to you.
Do you think you discussed Hardback then?
Yeah, I'm sure we mentioned it.
I think you mentioned it, but I don't know if we went in depth with it. I remember you seeing you play Hardback. It was actually, I think it was the first time you joined at a game day that I was at. It was when you met us at Rutgers and we played in the cafeteria. But I didn't join in on that one, but I remember you playing it. I have not played it yet, but I would definitely try it. So,
remind me, how many players can play this?
2 to 5.
And with 5, there are more types of cards, or no?
No.
This isn't one of the ones where you have more pieces with more players.
That is with the final game that you're going to mention.
Right. So that's, you know, that's an interesting, but that doesn't count as a mechanic, really, does it? I mean, is that a mechanic you would talk about, you know, games that are different for different numbers of players?
I think that's just something that a lot of games have, and that's just about game scalability.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of games will have fewer spots available in a 2-player game compared to a 4-player game to make it a more tighter experience where you have to really choose where you want to go and make you care more about where the other person goes.
Right.
All right, 2 more. Let's get through them.
Oh, yes, there are 2 more. Dice fishing, roll and catch. I like that. We played that yesterday. Actually, we played Hardback, Dice Fishing, and our last game all yesterday. We had a good afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoyed that because you have the 5 plain dice, 5, mm-hmm. What do we call
D6.
5D6, 1D10, and 1D20.
Excellent.
And so you have to strategically decide how many of those dice you're going to pull out to roll to attempt to make the, would you call that a contract if it's 1 card or no?
Just trying to catch a fish.
Catch a fish, right, Right. So that is good. You need to learn to do some strategy. And now, as Jonah had pointed out, it's that you can play with three people, right? And that gets a little more.
Yeah. So Dice Fishing Roll and Catch is another 2 to 5 player game that I don't think scales as well as Hardback. Hardback is a game where you're really paying attention to what you're doing most of the time, and what the other people do doesn't always influence you that much. But in Dice Fishing Roll and Catch, you are bidding dice, and whoever bids the fewest gets to try and catch the fish first. So in a two-player game, there's a lot less strategy or thought behind how many you'll put forward, because it's just, did you put forward fewer dice than one other person? Whereas in a four-player game, you might be making riskier calls. So, you know, when there's one of the cards is, can you roll a 7? And, you know, if I choose a D10, that would roll before 2D6, because whoever puts forward fewer dice rolls first. Rolling 1D10 and trying to get a 7 or higher is pretty unlikely. But if it's a four-player game, I might be really keen to make that unlikely decision, hoping to go first before everyone else.
Right. I enjoyed that. And I think on the surface, because they're, you know, the cards, although they have different numbers on them, they kind of look the same. I mean, you might get fooled. Mm-hmm. You know, you might get fooled that you don't have all these different colors, all the cards are the same colors. But I enjoyed the strategy of having to think about that. I think I caught on as we got a little further. Oh, but then again, you know, Jonas sometimes had to say to me when I put out dice that couldn't even get there, you know, I didn't put out enough dice to even come up with the number or the combination. Again, he very, very nicely and patiently said to me, you can't do that.
Yeah, so in this game, you can roll a D10 or a D20 for the number on the die or for the power. The power just being the ability to re-roll the other dice that you chose. And there was a time or two where my mom chose a D20 and a D6. And she was rolling to get 13. And she said, I'm rolling the D20 for the power. And I would say, how are you going to roll a 6-sided die and get 13 or higher?
Right. And
fun fact, I literally just bought this game because I remembered how much I liked it and I found it online and I was like, I want it. So I bought it.
Yeah, it's heaps of fun.
Yeah.
Where'd you buy it from?
So the only place I could find it in America and under $40 was Noble Knight Games. It's in near mint condition. So it's nearly indistinguishable from new, according to them. It's in the U.S. and they have one in stock. So I was like, eh, I like this game. This is one that I've played with friends and I borrowed your copy, but I would like to have my own because it's a quick and easy one. So,
yeah. And it also, I think, plays great with family because you can really boil it down to roll some dice and try and get this number. So, you know, it's quick and easy and fun as well.
Now, Janine, I know that you haven't listened to the episode with Patrick yet, but on the episode with Patrick, we talked about have you ever just bought a game without doing research and or anything like that? And I ashamedly said, yes, of course I have. And this is another one of those times.
That seems to be your MO.
Yes. I don't need it, but I want it. So this one was easy.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm. All right, final game, Mom, and then we'll let Ben do some talking on this.
Yes, absolutely.
Episode.
So our last game that we played, and it was yesterday, was QE, Jonah and my mom and me. And
so what is QE? Can you tell everyone?
Yes. QE is an auction game in which there were three of us. And so you turn over a card that is a company or some type of a company, and the person whose turn it is writes down a numerical value, and the two other people will bid for that company, and they submit their bid secretly to the person who put out the first numerical value, and whoever has the highest bid will get that company.
Right.
But the other people don't necessarily know what the winning bid was.
And how much money do you have in this game?
you have an unlimited amount of money, but whoever spent the most money at the end of the game automatically loses. So
what happened game one, Mom?
Game one, Mom spent and got a lot of companies, but lost automatically.
Yeah.
And I learned afterwards I spent the least, but I still didn't win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting because both of our games were really close. The first game, my grandmother won with 24 points. I had 23 points, and then my mom lost with 0. And then the second game, I had 28 points. 27. My mom had 27 points, and my grandmother had 0. So I think it's really interesting how close the scores were in the end, especially with infinite money and inexperienced players.
What I liked about this, again, is some of the complexity. I mean, I like the complexity of the rules, the ways that you can make different combinations and permutations of various types of companies bought. And you would like to, by the way, we didn't mention that each of us is representing a region. So it is, if I had the U.S., it is to my advantage to accumulate U.S. companies because I get more points for that. So, and like the game that we are going to focus on, there are the various columns and rows that you add up to get your score. I like that.
Yeah.
I really think that that's neat. Now, Ben, I considered this a flip and write game, but it isn't really. I mean, that's the way I interpret it. We're flipping cards and we're writing, but it's not. That's a small component, but
Right.
So I very much liked it. So let me ask you a question. In these that we've talked about, well, do you want to say something about QE? I'm sorry.
The only thing I'd like to say about QE is I can't wait until I can play it in person. I finally got my copy, and I ordered a copy of On Tour, which is a roll and write as well that I think we've mentioned before. And I got them, but I mean, obviously I don't have anybody to play with in person at the moment. But I'm just really excited to actually try QE in person because I think it might be a little different when you can see the other people as opposed to playing through a screen.
Yeah, I think I have mentioned this a few times before on the podcast, but I'm trying not to play too many board games on Tabletop Simulator that exist above the table, which is something that we like to say. So a game that exists above the table is a game where you really care about the interpersonal relations and reactions and, seeing, someone has to have a poker face in this game, potentially. And having a poker face is irrelevant when you don't see the other players on, when you play on the screen. So, I really enjoyed playing this in person. And I think it was definitely more fun to, write something in secret and pass it across the table. And yeah, I thought it was great.
The only thing I wanted to say, so of all the games we mentioned, and then our last game, was more than one put up by the same company? In other words, did each game represent a different company that we've talked about? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I'm quite sure that every game we played was made by a different company.
That's pretty neat.
I am now 100% sure, yeah.
I like that.
I have a question about QE that might be a weird question, but it just has to do with playing in person. I know when I talked to them at PAX, they said that for this new version, this reprint, they made the coating for the dry erase harder to wipe away because they found that when people were sliding it across the table, sometimes it would wipe off what they wrote. Did that happen at all? I don't even know if that's something that could, unless you're playing on a tablecloth, but I don't know. I guess it's a valid concern if you're trying to slide a dry erase piece face down.
Yeah, so we actually, I think, made a conscious effort from the very beginning not to slide the pieces. My mom is nodding at me. And not only that, but when we were given the company that we won, we would kind of stack them off center, kind of like dominoes, fallen dominoes, I guess I can describe it as. So no company that we won was ever fully face down on the table. So that way it couldn't really get erased either.
I, f- I feel like this would be a game I would like to use wet erase on, but you erase so often that I don't know if it's like worth bringing a damp paper towel to the table, but I don't know. That was something that they specifically brought up to me when I talked to them at the convention. So I figured it was something I would ask since I haven't played mine yet. So
yeah. Another thing I just want to mention really quickly about this game is the player aid, the player board that each person has is extremely helpful. You know, we couldn't really parse the rules when we played it online the first time. I remember we weren't sure what the bonuses were and how you scored points. But in person, I mean, you can really start the game with someone who's never played it before and say, this is a game where you have an infinite amount of money. If you spend the most at the end, you lose. And then just cross things off on the board. And it really, I think it works from there. What do you think, Mom?
Oh, no, I thought that I think I picked it up pretty well. I don't remember you having to say to me, gently or otherwise, you know, like in Santorini or, you know, some of the other ones, that you can't do this, or you want to do this with this many die or whatever. So in that respect, I think then that, yes, you know, you could hit the ground running.
All right. Well, we have talked enough for this segment. Ben, why don't you tell us what you played this past week?
Funny story. Once again, I'm boring and haven't played much of anything this week. I played a lot of Rocket League, but that's a video game. So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of took this week to myself a bit and played a lot of disc golf and more video games than board games this week. But I don't know. I think I'm going to try and finally beat Hostage Negotiator soon, because that's a solo-only game. And that one is one that jumped out at me from my shelf, and I haven't played it in a bit, but the first time I tried it, I played 6 games in a row and lost all of them. So,
wow.
So I'm going to try and beat it.
So how does Hostage Negotiator work?
So Hostage Negotiator, and I guess it's worth talking about since I'm not just saying nothing, but it is, again, it's a solo only game where you are using cards and dice to try and save hostages that have been taken in this imaginary world. So it's got kind of modules when it comes to the cards. So you can pick different hostage takers that have different like requests. So there's a deck of like major demands, minor demands, and terror cards. And terror cards are events that you draw after your turn each round, and they will do something negative for the game. Sometimes it is a little positive, like this case they'll do nothing, but most of the time it's either the loss of a hostage or the increase of terror, like they'll do something that increases the terror. And there's a terror track in the game, and depending on how high the terror goes, it limits how many dice you can roll. So you typically start rolling 2 dice, and you use the dice to determine your success or failure for the negotiating tactics that you play from your cards. So, for example, one card might say, you give me something, I'll give you something type of deal, and you have to roll 2 dice. And if you get 2 successes, you could free 1 hostage, but the terror might go up by 1, but you've freed a hostage, which is a good thing. If you roll no successes, they might say no and like kill 2 hostages, which sounds terrible, but I mean, they're little wooden people, so it is what it is. But if the terror goes up over a certain level, you're only rolling 1 die, which really limits how many successes you can roll, because it goes from 2 successes to no successes. So if you roll 1 success, it might be like okay, because you can dump cards from your hand to give yourself a second success, but you don't want to lose these cards because that's how you play and free hostages. So you really have to think about what card you want to play on this turn, when it's worth dumping some cards in order to up one of your failures to a success. And you have to manage that terror and everything, all while these demands are coming out that might say, like, if you don't free this many hostages in the next 2 turns, you lose. Like, it's pretty crazy. And yeah, it plays quick because it's solo, and you could just be like, oh, this turn I do this, roll the dice, do this, roll the dice. and you finish the game in 20 minutes, half hour sometimes. And I lost pretty quickly a lot, so I was able to play six games in a row and lose them all. But it's solo only, and in these times, it's not a bad thing to play. And I think I'm going to give that another shot soon. So
even against yourself, you lose.
Yeah, it's it's sad.
Wow, Mom, really piling on here.
It's okay. It happens.
Ben is good-natured.
So, Mom, there was a game that you conveniently left out of the games we played in the past 2 weeks, and it just so happens to be your choice for Game of the Week. What game is that?
My choice for Game of the Week is Silver and Gold.
Tell us about that.
Silver and Gold is a game in which you are, I guess, the way it's described, trying to fill a map of an island. And you flip cards and you see various patterns. The island is basically made up of adjoining squares and in various patterns. And everyone has two cards in front of them, the two islands. And then you flip a card and you see a pattern of either two squares or three or four squares in an L or a T.
Like a Tetris pattern.
A Tetris pattern, right. For those of us who, you know, are not too old to be past the Tetris in our vocabulary. A Tetris pattern. And then you fill that out on your map and you try to complete the map with the flipped over cards. And then you get bonuses for finding hidden treasure or palm trees and things like that. And again, you know, it took me a little while to figure out about the strategy, because you don't just fill these things in willy-nilly, because you know what the possibility is of the various patterns that will be coming up. And you may want to leave that pattern open in your card, in your island. Knowing, though, that of the eight available cards that you will flip over, only seven will be flipped each round.
Right, and each shape card that is flipped over is a shape that each player has to put on their card.
That's
right.
That's right. Each player does have to do that. Again, you do have some individuality for finding buried treasure and palm trees and things like that. But this truly is a flip and write game.
That's
is that
right.
so?
Truly a flip and write. So I think the definition of flip and write and roll and write, which we'll talk about in a few minutes when we switch over to the mechanic of the week. I think a flip and write is something gets flipped and everyone has to deal with that. And a roll and write is something gets rolled and everyone has to deal with that.
Right. Right. That's true. Because not everyone is dealing the same way, I guess, in QE.
Right.
I got it. I really found this interesting. I liked it. And we played four player, mm-hmm. Jonah, Jessica, and my mom and me. And we played a few rounds. And I think that we all enjoyed it. I think that we caught on quickly to the rules, maybe a little more slowly to the strategy. But that's how, you know, that's how it's going to be.
Right. And very importantly, this is the game that your mom requests every time I mention playing games.
That's true. That's true. I have learned that. So she likes it too.
Ben, do you want to tell the story of how we discovered Silver and Gold?
Yeah, so as we've probably established by now, you're much more apt to walk around these big conventions and just talk to everybody. And I typically just walk around, and if something catches my eye, I walk over and silently stare at somebody until they talk to me. We were walking around the show floor at PAX Unplugged, and time blends together. It was this past year, right?
I have no idea. I think so.
This most recent PAX, I'm pretty sure. And I guess we walked past the booth where Silver and Gold was being played, and the guy asked if we wanted to play a demo game. At least that's how I recall it. And we said yes, and we went over and played a demo game. And it was like 15 minutes, and I think we played like a round in like 2 or 3 minutes, and he's like, do you want to keep playing? And we ended up playing like an entire game in like 10, 15 minutes. And I think we like both immediately bought the game, or I know I did, but I think you came back to it later.
Yeah, I think another thing that's really great about this game is the price. I mean, it's really great to just have a easy but fun family game that costs $20. I mean, it's a very reasonable price for how much we pay for board games these days.
And it's also a relatively small box.
That's right.
So when you play these demo games at conventions, were you guys, was it the two of you and the guy manning the booth, or the two of you and two other random conventioneers, as it were?
I think in this case, it was two other random players that had walked up and were also roped into the game. And I was actually, funny enough, I was actually going to mention the box size as well, that I could fit it in one of my pockets. I mean, it's really, really small, so that's convenient. I used to carry it around when I was traveling, actually, for work. I would put it in my backpack because it would take up no room. But yeah, in this case, we had some other convention goers that just walked up and they played the rest of this game out with us. And yeah, like Jonah said, the price was appealing, the size was appealing, and I've mentioned before that my family aren't huge into board games, but when I find a game that I feel would be something that they would enjoy playing, I typically pick it up. And this was one of those games that was pretty easy for me to say, hey, my family would like this, I think, so let's go for it. And I really, really enjoy it. I like Silver and Gold a lot.
Yeah, I really did too. And that's the one I think that when I was getting ready, well, I know when I was getting ready for this episode that I researched the most, because for a bunch of these, I actually looked at the various YouTube sites, playthroughs and things like that. So yeah, I really liked it. I really enjoyed, so I must have enjoyed it to want to look into it.
What are the various YouTube sites? There's the YouTube, there's the Vimeo. What are the other YouTube sites you're thinking of?
Oh, sorry. The various, well, YouTube videos on YouTube.
There we go.
Okay.
The different channels.
The different channels.
People are going to give me a hard time for giving my mother a hard time.
No. Go ahead.
One thing that I think was interesting was, if I'm remembering, when we were originally playing this at the convention, now most of the time the people who are doing these demo games at the convention are just volunteers, and they get the games early typically, and they learn the games so that they can teach them to people who are going to the convention. Sometimes you get lucky and you actually get into like a demo game with the designer of the game who knows everything about it. But I think in this case, it was just a volunteer. And I do think that we discovered an error in the rules that he taught us when we bought the game and played later, in that he told us that you only were able to cross out a single square if you could not fit the shape that you draw.
Don't say anymore, because I've said this the wrong way to Jessica and my mom and grandmother, and they messed up because of me.
Well, you didn't tell it. You are, well, this, yes. I thought if you cannot use that, or even if you don't want to, you can just do 1X. But what is it? What is the rule?
That is the rule, but I think he taught us if you cannot, not just if you can't and or don't want to.
Oh, I know. You taught me the right way then.
Yeah, so he made it seem like, if you, for example, because you have two cards at once that you're trying to fill in, if you can fit it on one of the two, you have to put it on one of the two, was how he originally taught us. But then we found out when we were reading the rules that you could say, oh, I just want to put 1X here. It sounds like you learned the right way. However, I actually fairly enjoyed where you were forced to put the shape in there. And I know when I play with my brother, he says, we're not playing the way that the rules state. We're playing where you have to put the shape in, just because it's a little more fun to not say, oh, I don't want this shape. Let's just put 1X in. But yeah, I remember him teaching us slightly incorrectly, but I think it's good either way.
Yeah, it's kind of like how I prefer playing Azul on the backside, because then you can really shoot yourself in the foot. And I really enjoy... I mean, I've said in the past that I don't like games that punish you, where you have to like beat the game and the opponents. But in some of these lighter games, I quite enjoy doing dumb stuff and then regretting it.
Maybe you guys could get a gig being the volunteers at these conventions.
It's I think it's a pretty thankless job. I think it's long hours and volunteer.
That's true. Well,
yeah, I think
maybe you get a game out of it. Who knows?
Well, I will say I do know a few people who volunteer. I know Oscar and Mike both volunteer quite a bit. And not only do these companies pay for you to get access to the convention, but from what I've heard from Mike, you pretty much, if you've done a good job, which usually the people who bring you in as volunteers appreciate your work, they basically say, here, take these leftover games that we've been demoing the whole time and go trade them with other vendors for games you want. So I know Mike has gotten a lot of really cool, like brand new games from conventions by taking stock that these developers gave him at the end and saying, go trade. And he's gone out and traded for games he's wanted and essentially spent no money and gone home with 5 or 6 new games. So, I mean, I agree. It definitely seems like it's thankless and a lot of work. But hey, if you like teaching people games and want to get something out of it.
I'm being pointed at right now.
You're a great teacher.
Well, thank you. I agree.
That would be, and we know from all these previous episodes how, you know, half the world is into game boards because of Jonah. Yeah, games, board games. I'm into game boards.
I do like game boards if the art's nice, so.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. Absolutely. What's the name of that? That one with the gardens that I really want to play.
Oh, that's Tang Garden? I have Tang Garden.
Yeah, that sounded like such a, you guys were talking about the boards.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is really, really cool. I don't remember if I left that in Florida or not, though. I'll have to walk downstairs and check soon. But yeah, that one's really cool. That's the one where it starts off black and white, and then you pull colored garden tiles out of piles, and you're making a garden with these landscapes around the outside for those listening. And it essentially turns a blank black and white board into like a piece of art by the time you're done, and it's really, really, really pretty.
Yeah, sounds really neat. Well, since we're talking about silver and gold, let's move on to our mechanic of the week, which is flip and write games and also roll and write games. So I pretty much explained this earlier, but Ben, you want to do another short rundown and mention a few games that use this mechanic?
Sure. So just to reiterate what the mechanic is, flip and write and roll and write games are games where you, in the case of Silver and Gold, which is a flip and write, you flip a card out, and typically everybody at the table, though some games are just for, you know, the person who's flipping or rolling, you use the outcome of that card flip or die roll, and you write something down on a personal player board, which you will use to score points. There are a lot of games in this category. I think the most famous one, if I would have to guess, is Yahtzee. Yahtzee is technically a roll and write. And now there are newer games such as Silver and Gold, which are flip and write games. Outside of Yahtzee, I know we've mentioned on this episode already, On Tour, which was a game that I picked up along with QE. And just a quick recap of On Tour. You are essentially a band that is touring America, and in this reprint, on the back of the United States map, there's now a map of Europe, so you could also tour Europe if you'd like. And you roll 2 10-sided dice, and you can use those dice in any order you want. You actually use them both ways, so if you, for example, roll a 1 and a 9, you would fill out in a location on your board a 91 and a 19. And at the end of the game, you are trying to draw a line, essentially connecting the dots from lowest number to highest number chronologically. And whoever has the longest tour wins the game. And that is a roll and write game. As I said, Yahtzee, Silver and Gold. And then another one that has become really popular that I haven't played yet, and I don't know if you have, Jonah, is Welcome To. And it's actually like Welcome To ... because there's a bunch of different expansions now. So like Welcome To Las Vegas, Welcome To Your New Home, all these sorts of names. Have you played it?
I have not played it. I was interested in trying it a few years ago when I first heard about it. But in a podcast I was listening to recently, someone mentioned how it's...
Is it the Game Brain podcast?
No, I think this was So Very Wrong About Games. They mentioned how it's basically redlining the board game, and redlining is a not good policy about not allowing people of color into certain neighborhoods. And when they mentioned that, it made me think about the game in a different way. And I don't know enough about the game, but it changed my perspective on wanting to try it. So
I can imagine. Very interesting.
Sorry. So there was some like subtle, I don't know.
Well, I think in the game, it's about like making neighborhoods and trying to have good neighborhoods in certain areas or something, which is very much how cities have been planned to benefit white people.
Right.
So, you know, the other side of the tracks might happen in that game, which might be okay with us, but surely wouldn't sit well with people of color.
Or so. Like that game where, you know, the villages were saved by building of churches.
That's right, Archipelago.
Archipelago.
Brutal. Anyway, another roll and write that Patrick actually mentioned last week was That's So Clever, which is a very popular one these days. And similarly, there is Can't Stop. And I believe Patrick talked about that in our Push Your Luck episode, because in Can't Stop, it is a roll and write where you keep wanting to use what is rolled, but the more you use it, the more dangerous the potential outcomes can be for you.
Is Can't Stop a roll and write? I thought Can't Stop was the one where you're moving cones across the board.
Oh, am I misremembering? Maybe I am. Well, then
I think in this case you are, but that's okay. We all have those moments.
We'll pretend to edit it out later. So
now, one thing that I do want to mention, which is fairly new, typically roll and write games and flip and write games are lighter games in terms of length of time and complexity, but recently there have been releases of heavy roll and write games. Now, I haven't played any of them, but there were literally Kickstarters for whatever the name is, a heavy roll and write game. And I'm kind of interested in seeing what that plays like. Now, I know our friend Val loves roll and write games. Like, she will go out of her way to buy roll and write games. And she, I believe, backed that game. So she's really excited to try it. And maybe when it comes in, I'll give it a shot. Heavy roll and write games are coming in. And if I could mention one more thing before you jump in, I think I was wrong, because I'm looking through the list of roll and writes and Can't Stop Express is on here. So I can't see why Can't Stop wouldn't be, but it might be just a slightly different play on the base Can't Stop. But, you know, I'll own up to it.
I just wanted to mention something about the mechanic itself really quickly. I have gone on record many times to talk about my disdain for randomness in board games, but it's really a disdain for one of the types of randomness. So I don't like making a decision and then having randomness affect the outcome. But this is the good type of randomness to me, because it's randomness and then decision making.
Right.
So you'll get this random shape, and then it's how well can you deal with it? So I actually quite enjoy flipping rights and rolling rights, because I think it is the right kind of randomness distilled into its purest form, kind of.
And
yeah, I remember you saying that before.
And we've definitely discussed how you can make some fun plays on the name roll and write, and not so much flip and write, but I know that there's literally the roll and write game, roll and write, and Dinosaur Island is actually releasing a roll and write game, but it's Dinosaur Island Roar and Write, which I mean, I don't know. Some of these, they're clever. I think they're funny, but I 100% agree with you on the randomness and then making your decision. And I mean, I think we all know by now that I don't mind randomness in general in my games, but I do like where you can really determine what to do with that randomness. Even though I don't mind the other side of things, I think roll and write games use randomness in a really good way, just because of that.
Mm-hmm. So, Mom, I know you've only really played one flip and write, and that is very much a function of me only having one flip and write. But what did you think of the mechanic? Was it interesting to you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was completely surprised that there was something that I was writing on that we were going to be reusing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that I completely didn't expect. And so I thought that that was great. And I do like your randomness assessment as well. You know, the randomness comes first and the conscious decision making afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I did like that because you can repeat and repeat and repeat. And even with seven cards or eight cards, but turning over seven, and some of these patterns even being
repeated,
I mean, I didn't get bored. You know, I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a great mechanic. And I think most of the games that use it don't overstay their welcome, which is really nice, which might be something to be concerned about in a heavy roll and write. I don't know if I would want to do a flip and write or a roll and write game for 2 hours.
Yeah. And just one thing I want to bring up about silver and gold specifically again that I forgot to mention when we were talking about it. But on your point, Janine, about the shapes that get repeated, I think it's really like an extra pretty easy to manage little layer of strategy to know that there are these eight shapes because they list out which eight shapes mm-hmm. are in the game. And as you're playing, you could be like, well, these six shapes have come out. So I only have the possibility of these two shapes being left, and that might be what comes out. But since you only flip seven of them, you can really plan your strategy around one of the two coming out. And I've definitely had moments where it comes down to needing one of the two remaining shapes and either getting it or not. And I think it adds an exciting little bit to silver and gold specifically.
I agree. I mean, I really think that was... stroke of genius, if I may say, as a novice, you know, that they would, you know, do this, that you would only be able to turn over seven when eight were there. And one of the things I didn't mention is, because again, I was looking at the YouTube channels, that people were talking about something that we didn't do, which is player order. I mean, basically, we just turned over the cards, but player order would matter if you finish your cards at the same time. If you are going for your, the premium with the gold, the hidden coins or whatever.
Right, to get the 6-point trophy and the 5-point trophy, etc.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't bring player order into it because I think for just casual play and first time play, you just kind of have to see how it works. And also, I think the player order part can slow the game down. But you did have that really great idea that you might have seen on the YouTubes of dealing each person one of the eight flipped up, or dealing each person the flipped up cards, and you just take turns flipping the card. So I would flip the first one, then you would flip the second one, and that's how you keep track of who's first in turn order that round.
Right. The way I saw it is that it was a 4-player game.
So everyone gets two.
And one person gets one.
Right.
Right. And that's how also you know who went first, because it's always, if I had one card, you go first. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it goes.
That's a smart idea. I never thought of that before.
Yeah, I'll find it and I'll show it to you. Yeah, I like that. I enjoyed looking at different groups' takes on this particular game. I guess I took a deep dive into this game. So I really enjoyed it.
And finally, this week, we have our new rotating topic, and we will be chatting about family games then and now. This is a very loosely defined topic for the three of us, so I'm interested to hear what everyone has to say. I'm going to start us off just by mentioning some classics and games that I think give you that same feel, but modernized and in some cases better. Some cases, maybe not. So first of all, Scattergories. Scattergories is a game that I grew up playing with you and my sister, of course. And I think everyone knows Scattergories, but in case people don't, you roll a 26-sided die, and it is a letter. Each face is a letter of the alphabet, the English alphabet, of course.
It may not have letters. X on it.
Oh, no,
I'm just guessing.
There might be X. We'll have to look into it. Anyway, whatever gets rolled is the letter that you have to start all of your answers with. So there will be a sheet with like 8 or 10 questions on it. If you roll an R and the question is car type, you know, if I put, how do you say it? It's French, Renault. If I put Renault and you also put Renault, neither of us get points. But if I put Renault and you put
Rolls Royce,
then we would both get points. So Scattergories, I think, is a great family game. And the modern version of it for me is Just One. So we actually have not played Just One, Mom, because I don't think it works that well at 4 people. It doesn't exist at 2 people. But in Just One, there will be a card just like Taboo with 5 words on it. And the guesser will choose one of those words that the other players have to write down a clue for. And each other person will, in secret, write down a one-word clue for that one word. Then all of the clue givers share their clues with each other. And if there are multiple people who wrote the same clue, they all get erased. And then the person comes back to try and guess the word, potentially with fewer clues this time. So I think it's really great because you want to give a really good clue for whatever the guessed word is, but not the obvious really good clue, because then it'll get erased with someone else's clue if they wrote the same thing. So I think this re-implements categories in a really neat way. And the other thing that I really like about it is that you can play with as many people as you want. It just gets harder and harder as you add more and more people. So, you know, I remember we played this at Patrick's one time, and the word that needed to be guessed was princess. So I thought that I had an obvious clue, but I went with it in case other people didn't. So I wrote down Mononoke, because there is the Miyazaki movie Princess Mononoke. And then someone else wrote down Peach for Princess Peach. And then someone else took it one step further and wrote down Mario. So when this person came back, they saw Mario, who has to save the princess, Peach for Princess Peach, and Mononoke, and they immediately said princess, and it worked out really well.
Wow, I would have said Leia, maybe.
Yeah, so that's also the fun part, is seeing, you know, coming back to this group of clues. You know, sometimes you come back and you see 7 clues in front of you, and you're just like, why can't I figure this out? Everyone wrote a great different clue, but somehow it doesn't work for my brain.
I think that's generational, this particular example you just gave me.
Right. So yeah, I think Just One is a great new implementation of Scattergories. And then I am just going to mention one more before I open up the floor. There is a game called Mastermind that I'm going to let you, Mom, introduce, and then I will talk about the modern re-implementation or similar game.
Right. Mastermind is basically a game with 5 different color pegs that you have to put into 5 holes in any order you want. And if you are, I guess, the code builder, you put these in these 5 pegs and it's hidden. You have a barrier. And then your opponent tries to figure out which colors and which order you have made for your code. And so you start by putting down 5 colors in some order. And then I, as the code maker, will give you clues as to which colors you have correctly and in which places you have them correctly. I think with 2, there are different ways to make that known. And so I think you have 10 tries, I guess, to deduce what my order of my code was. Now, this is interesting because when we were coming up with games then and now, I thought of Mastermind too. But I used to play that with my dad. I can't believe that I ever really, even in 10 rounds or whatever, ever got it right. It just seemed to me that the combinations and permutations were just too much. But, you know, we played and enjoyed it.
Yeah. And the new game that is similar to Mastermind is called Zendo, mm-hmm. Z-E-N-D-O. And Zendo is this really interesting game that comes with a bunch of little plastic shapes that are different colors and shapes and sizes. And the mastermind in this game will create a structure with different types of pieces in it that follows a rule. And then the guessers will create other structures to see if they can correctly deduce what that rule is. And the way Zendo is really neat is it teaches the scientific method, just like Mastermind does. Because you see something that you know has a rule behind it, and then you keep putting out different hypotheses to try and find out if you can crack the code, just like in Mastermind.
And should you only change one variable at a time?
Well, that's the thing. You can decide what you want to change and what you don't want to change. And the Mastermind in Zendo, I'm quite sure, just has a white stone and a black stone to say, this is valid or this is not valid. So you try and get closer and closer.
Ben, have you played Mastermind or Zendo?
So I don't know if I've ever... I feel like I've played Mastermind and I looked it up and I vividly remember Mastermind. But I don't know if I've ever actually played it. I know I've never played Zendo, though. I'm looking at it now. I know I've never played Zendo. I've seen it, but I haven't played it. Mastermind, I think I have, but it's been a while. Like, a while. So I don't remember actually playing it, but I feel like I have.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about some family classic games, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, in my family, the classics are the classics. So, like, Clue, Yahtzee, Scrabble. Those are the ones that my family would typically gravitate towards. Not going to lie, I have not played Clue in a long time, but I always did like Clue. But my brother and my mom play Scrabble constantly. I play Yahtzee with my mom all the time. Those are really the classic games that we played. I don't know if I necessarily have, similar to you, how I don't know if I have like the comparison in terms of like what a modern version of those might be. But I know that I've recently picked up some modern family games that my family did enjoy. I think that the one that they enjoyed the most was actually Hey Robot, which I don't know if I've mentioned on the podcast before, but I've definitely mentioned to you and Patrick, mostly because Patrick posted this in our group chat. I went on Kickstarter. I backed it in order to get information on it, not realizing that it ended like the next day and I ended up purchasing it by mistake. But I'm glad that I did because it's actually a lot of fun. And I actually left it at my parents' house in Florida for them to play with friends, at least for now, since I can't really get together with people. But Hey Robot is this really neat concept that is literally a family game for now because you have to use an Echo device or a Google Home. And I'm not saying the name because I have one in my room and it'll activate, but you need a smart speaker with a smart assistant in order to play the game. But basically you flip out a grid of words and you will pick certain words that are worth a certain number of points. And you try and get your smart speaker to say that word. So for example, if one of the words is shark and it's worth 2 points, you will say, the word to start your smart speaker, what is the movie Jaws about? And it'll say, Jaws is about a great white shark. And then boom, you've got that point. So you get that number of points. But if you mess up and you don't get it, you put a little token on it and it increases the point value of that specific word. So it incentivizes people to keep going after it. And it's really funny because you get to hear, you know, what people are saying. And it's first to 16 wins, but we played it with my family and it's done in teams. So it's a team game. You could play up to like however many people you want. The only complaint I have about the game is sometimes you get in that mode where you're like, just hold on. It's doing this whole big description. Just wait. It'll eventually get to the word I wanted to say. And you're sitting there waiting for like a minute long description where it's like just spewing out words. And we actually had that happen where I don't remember the word my dad was trying to get, but he's like, nobody tell it to stop. So there's like a timer. So if the timer goes off, we tell it to stop. But he's like, nobody is telling it to stop. I know this word's going to be said. And it like the timer like ran out. And then it, like 2 seconds afterward, it said the word like 100 words deep. And we finally got to it. And he's like, I'm taking those points. I'm taking them. So that one's definitely a lot of fun because it incorporates technology in like an interesting and fun way. And you'd think it would be really easy because you think you can just ask something that's even vaguely similar and it'll say the word, but it's actually like more difficult than you think it is, which brings a bit of fun into it. So that's probably the newest family game that we've played. But yeah, it's really cool. And they actually have an online implementation to use during COVID. So you can actually play the whole game online right now.
Cool.
I like that. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Can you talk about some of the family games you know from long ago?
Yeah. Well,
I wasn't going to say it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a kid, I played Monopoly. I played Life. I played Battleship, you know, initially on a graph paper with, you know, my dad, who must have played it like this in Romania, and it probably wasn't even called Battleship. I mean, I think he just made little, you know, five square things and four square things. And I guess you each had a grid. That I definitely remember playing on graph paper and then with the game.
Can you say Battleship in Romanian?
No, but...
Can you say ship in Romanian?
Yes, but I'm not for public consumption.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, we're not going there. By the way, though, you guys had mentioned, I think, that a possible updated version, but really very, what's the word,
hectic?
Anxiety provoking was Sonar, right?
Yeah, Captain Sonar, definitely.
Is that what it's called, Captain Sonar? I'd like to play that, but you said it's difficult, so you need to get 8 people together, right?
Yeah, you need to have 8.
So for listeners out there who are interested in Captain Sonar, there is Sonar and Captain Sonar, and they have almost the exact same artwork. Be careful, because Sonar is meant for like 4 people, and it's not real time. So if you're looking to get Captain Sonar, you're looking for Captain Sonar, not Sonar. Just want to clear that up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I played, you know, also trying to think about what I played as a kid was Stratego. And did you play Stratego as a kid?
I love that game. I have Lord of the Rings Stratego, though, because I'm a huge Lord of the Rings nerd. But yes, I loved that game. I want to play it again.
I mean, I have Lord of the Rings Trivial Pursuit. So
wow.
It's at your house. I don't know why you're saying wow.
Maybe I'd actually be good at that one.
Yeah, I again looked online because Stratego was certainly something I hadn't thought about for years. But, you know, the people were talking about the various ranks and who can take whom. I'm pretty sure we did not play correctly when I was a kid because, you know, it seemed a little more complicated.
So, interestingly enough, I saw a discussion about the ranks as well. I think they've recently changed the rankings because I remember when I played, the admiral or whatever the general, whatever the highest
marshal,
the marshal was number one. So like number one could take anything above number one because number one was the best. But I think now the marshal is like number 13.
Uh-huh.
And it's reversed.
Right.
But I remember it being the best one was number one.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Right. And then one guy on YouTube was saying something about tournament rules. Like, can you imagine? The Stratego tournament.
It's wild.
It's funny because I think a common theme in family board games is maybe not playing it 100% correctly every time, which I think also is fine and gets to the heart of why we play board games, which is, you know, to spend time with others and with your family is just to, you know, enjoy your time with your family. I think Monopoly very famously is played incorrectly by just about everyone in the world. Because, you know, in Monopoly, if you land on a space and you don't want to buy it, that space goes up for auction for the other players. And no one plays that way. I've never played that way. Then there's the, you know, getting money if you land on free parking. There's so many house rules, but I mean, you play a game to have fun. So that's what matters at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Monopoly is a never ending nightmare. I don't hate Monopoly. It's just that the house rules literally cause it to never end. That's my problem with it.
I think I was trying to think of what this game could replace or be similar to from the older games. But I couldn't think of one. Azul. I think Azul is the modern classic board game. I think Azul is just loved by almost everyone. It's super nice to look at. It plays pretty quickly. And another thing that's really nice about it is it can be as competitive or not competitive as you want. You know, you can look at the other players' player boards and really draft your tiles accordingly to try and not let someone else get something. But at the same time, you can just look at your own board and try and make a pretty mosaic. So
another one that I've only played it once, but I think it could be a good family game, similar to like Azul, if I remember correctly, in terms of like taking things from the middle. But I played it at the Lone Eagle board game night, but I think it's Skull is the name, which is the one with the discs.
Yeah, Skull's a fun one.
I like that one too. I've only played that the one time, but I think that would be a neat family game as well, I think.
Yeah, Skull is one where it's basically a game you can play with coasters, and there are skulls on some of them and roses on the other, and I think you have to guess how many skulls are left out there, and someone else has to challenge that or agree to it. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't played it in forever, but it's a great light family game. And it reminds me of Cockroach Poker, which is a really fun game, which is just another game that involves nonsense bluffing with other players. And, you know, everyone's always afraid to call out your bluff. And I like to do really stupid things in these games. So in Cockroach Poker, there are different types of bugs, and you hand a bug to someone else, and they basically say, okay, or BS. And what I really enjoy doing is not looking at the top card that I'm giving to someone and claiming it is a certain bug type. And then people are just so afraid of calling BS in case by some miracle I was correct about what I claimed to be passing to someone. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Now, what's really interesting about family games is depending on your family, the term family game can mean many different things, because if your family's very into board games, you might consider a slightly more midweight game a family game than some people who don't play as many games.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie, who has been on the podcast before for, you know, Magic the Gathering and stuff, he told me that he plays Food Chain Magnate with his family, like, every so often. And, you know, he grew up playing chess and Magic the Gathering with his family as well. So family games can definitely skew more heavily in certain families.
Yeah, because the one I was going to mention, which made me think that, was Hive. I play Hive with my dad. And what's interesting is my dad and I have never once played chess together. But Hive is kind of chess-like in that it is a strategy game where you are building a hive of insects, and you start with a queen bee. So within the first four turns of the game, you need to have placed your queen bee out on the table. There's no board. You just place these hex tiles out on the table. But each insect has different powers. So you are essentially like one person's doing a move to move one of their bug tiles, and you're trying to surround the opponent's queen bee completely in order to win the game. And it's kind of like chess in that it is an abstract strategy game where you're trying to capture a certain piece, but it's one of those that's really simple to learn but hard to master. There's a lot of strategy that can go into it, so it's not like a Yahtzee type very light family game, but for me it's a family game because I play it with my dad. I would recommend everybody play Hive, by the way. I think Hive is better than chess.
Yeah, Hive is really cool. I just thought right now of what I think are the three best family board games to play right now. And I am going to very impromptu share this list that I just made.
Okay. Starting at the bottom, number three.
In no order.
No order.
I think that the three best games for playing with your family right now are Azul, Just One, and then a game that we will hopefully play tonight if someone...
I know what's coming.
...doesn't play Bridge for too long. Wavelength.
I knew that was coming.
Wavelength is a fantastic, fantastic game that before you play it, doesn't sound like a game and doesn't sound like fun either.
Right. It sounds nebulous to me.
Right. It sounds very nebulous.
Yeah, I said to my mom, because my mom was looking for things to do in her neighborhood. So they moved. So we used to live here in New Jersey on like a circle, like a large circle. And everybody in the neighborhood always used to get together for like left, right, center and stuff was like what my parents always or my mom always went to. And now she lives on a cul-de-sac and has like friends where she lives down in Florida. Now she's always trying to like find things to do. And I'm like, you should look into this game Wavelength. I think you guys would really like it. And she's like, oh, well, what is it? And I like explained it to her and she's like, what? That doesn't sound like a game. And I'm like, it's one of those, you have to play it, but I can't believe I forgot to mention Wavelength because I love Wavelength. So.
Sorry. Yeah. And that's, you know, what I really like about Wavelength is twofold. You know, one, well, let me describe the game really quickly. In Wavelength, you will have a great little wheel that has a region on it that has on the edges twos, then on the inside threes, and the very center four. So you're trying to get someone to point a needle at the center of this region. And you will draw a card that has a word pointing to the left and a word pointing to the right. And what you do is you say on a scale of X to Y, and then you give the example Z. So this is an example that is not in the game, but I read online and thought it was hilarious. There was one that said on a scale of wrestler name to porn star name, and then you come up with a name. And then your teammates have to hear this name that you gave out and determine where on the spectrum of porn star name to wrestler name this lies. And then the other team will guess and say if they think that the actual answer is more towards the porn star side or more towards the wrestler side. And then it gets revealed and everyone is like, oh, wow, that's really what you thought. You thought Larry was a wrestler name? Well, you're wrong. So I think it's super fun. And what I really like about it as well is you can use it, A, as a tool to like meet new people or, you know, play this for the first time with friends, with new friends to learn stuff about them. And the other side to that is you can play it with longtime family and start some discussions and say, wow, you really think that? So I forget. What I think, so we played this, me, Jessica, and her parents when we were skiing and snowboarding. Well, not on the slopes, but I think the question was on a scale of bad cereal to good cereal. And then someone says something like life. And then you have to think like, is good cereal all the way to the right? Is that like the best cereal you'll ever eat? Or is like a decently good cereal somewhere halfway between the middle and the right. So there's a lot of interpersonal stuff that goes on with playing Wavelength that I think makes it so much fun as well.
All right, I'm willing to try.
All right.
Another one that I have here, though, to be fair, my family aren't huge fans of it when we played, but I think Love Letter is another good, quick family game. Now, Love Letter, each person has a card which determines what role they have. So you could be like a prince, a princess, a guard,
a baron,
and there are a few other ones, a few other roles. But essentially, there's a hierarchy to how the cards work, and if you play a card out... You pick a card and play a card, and certain cards will beat other cards, but you're trying to guess who the other person is. And essentially you're trying to figure out who the princess is, if I recall correctly. I haven't played Love Letter in a little while, but it's a really quick and easy to pick up game, and it's got like a total of 10 cards in it, so it's super easy to carry around as well.
Yeah, Love Letter is great. I actually have it upstairs. I got it for like $4 many years ago.
Yeah, didn't you travel with it? I seem to remember having seen it.
Probably, I mean,
in the RAV4.
Yeah, it fits in your pocket and probably in the glove box. So,
but can you play it with two people?
I think you can, but I don't think it would be that interesting.
Maybe you took it on the road just in case you met other people.
Yeah, who knows?
I'm literally looking through my owned games list for which ones I would consider family games. I don't think I own too many family games at this point because my family aren't big into board gaming, but I definitely have played family games in the past, but most of them, as I said before, are the classic ones.
Ben, I have to say that I'm surprised that you know Stratego. I mean, I guess I really would have thought it was my age and older.
I think my dad is a bit of a history guy, so I think he owned it when he was a kid, and it was just one of those classic games that he had. And I think I played that mostly with my mom as well. My dad will try more new games. Like, my mom will barely play anything. But I tend to play more games with my mom because we play games we know, and it's quicker to start playing a game with her than it is to play with my dad.
There's just another game that I want to mention very briefly that is, you know, a lot of family games can kind of be classified more as an activity, which is totally fine. There is a family game that I think is really neat that I have never played, but everyone who has played it has told me that they love it, and it's hilarious. And this game is called Telestrations. So Telestrations, Ben is jumping for joy right now. Telestrations is a game where you have this great little notebook with like 10 whiteboard cards on it. And on the first card, you write something down, like an idea or a word or something. Then you pass that to your left. They look at that, and then they flip it, and they draw that on the next one. Then they pass that to the person to their left. They look at that drawing, and they flip it, and they try and write on the next thing what that drawing was of. And then that continues until you run out, and then you just look at the great story that you have told together. It's like telephone meets bad drawing.
Yeah, I can't draw.
That's part of the fun.
Yeah, that's part of the fun. And I can tell you, for the reason I was jumping for joy, I was going to mention this one, but I don't know. It really heavily depends on your family and what kind of a relationship you have. But Telestrations After Dark is the one I played. And that is an adult-themed one. And it is the funniest, probably the funniest board game experience I've had to date. I actually remember it was not with my family, but interestingly enough, some friends were trying to set me up with a friend's coworker and had a board game night in which they invited me and a few other people and her, and they made us all play Telestrations After Dark, and it was like a really interesting way to try and break the ice. But there are many a thing I cannot mention on this podcast and keep it from being explicit, but it was by far the funniest board game experience I've ever had, and seeing these terrible drawings is like the best part of it,
because terrible explicit drawings.
Yeah, pretty much, because you when explicit things come into it and you're trying to draw them, nobody has any idea what you're trying to draw, and then they guess another terrible explicit thing on the next page, and then the next person just ruins that too. And it just, when you flip back through this whole story, it was the funniest thing I've ever been involved in when it comes to a board game. So I would definitely recommend that game to anybody, whether it's After Dark or not. The bad drawing is part of the fun. So yeah,
that sounds good. I like that.
It didn't work out between us, by the way. So,
yes.
In case you were wondering.
We were wondering.
You interpreted her explicit drawing incorrectly, and the rest is history.
Yeah, pretty much.
You don't understand me. Ben, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I was just thinking about the episode where you mentioned zombie dice. That was a few episodes ago. So when you say you lost by four, does that mean you lost by four brains?
Yes.
Okay. I understood.
Lost by four brains. Yep. Okay.
That's it.
All right. Well, Mom, thank you for becoming a participant after being an avid listener.
Yeah, absolutely. This was good.
Yeah, I'm glad you were able to join. And thank you, Ben, for being a great co-host as always.
Oh, thank you. At least I win at something.
All right. And thank you to Louisa for the excellent music throughout. Thank you to all of our listeners. And we will see you all next week.